The following is a recording of the Sunday morning service of Rangeville Community Church.
Who enjoys a good movie? Yeah, most of us do. You get caught up in the action, you get caught up in the emotions of whatever's going on. And if it's a Hollywood movie, it's going to finish with either a happy ending or a happily ever after for the couple. It's a classic Hollywood thing. And that's the way that they have driven those movies, because that's the way most of us want to walk out of a movie feeling. It's interesting when you go and go to maybe a film festival or alternate movies and they finish with a storyline. You go, what's that all about? Has anyone ever experienced that? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. And you walk out. I remember the first time I saw a film like that. I was in my early 20s. And I walked out and I'm just trying to process what's going on. And this friend who was with me said, it's just that you're used to Hollywood. You're just used to happy ever after endings. But, you know, these movies are really good too, because they actually make you stop. They make you think. They make you try and process stuff, because the question that they're asking is actually about life or about yourself or about others, rather than just making yourself feel good. And it's interesting, most of us like happy endings, but as we read through the scriptures, as we read through the Bible, we discover that it's full of stories that don't have happy endings. Have you ever noticed that? But you see, what's interesting is that you have to see the whole story. It's like if you're reading through the Gospels and you finished reading at the crucifixion, you'd go, oh, what's that all about? But you have to keep reading to discover the resurrection. And suddenly there's new life and there's new hope. And it's same throughout many different parts of the Bible. We read a section just in the context of that section and it might leave us feeling a bit, oh. But then we have to see the whole picture. And so without giving you too much of a spoiler alert, today's message, when we look at it, we have to read it in the context of the whole chapter. But we're just looking at the first part, and it mightn't finish with you walking out going, I feel really good about that. So I just thought I'd warn you about that up front. Because you see, up until now, in John's Gospel, Jesus is this amazing miracle worker. Because he is turning the whole world upside down. We started off, we see that he turns water into wine. He turns tables in the temple. He turns the life of a Pharisee around and talks about new life and new birth. He turns a whole Samaritan village to start to walk into a relationship with God. All of this is happening in the first four chapters of John. It's amazing. People are excited. Suddenly you get to John chapter 5. Jesus' ministry takes another shift. It starts to become a much more public ministry, and it starts to become an opposed ministry. Now we start to see that the Jewish leaders are starting to speak against Jesus. They're starting to inquire about him. They're starting to get a bit upset with him. And there starts to be real opposition from this point in John chapter 5, verse 1 on. It's a major transition point, because Jesus has come back to Jerusalem. And so let's read from John chapter 5, verses 1 to 15. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." Once the man was cured, he picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who'd been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat."
But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. So as we go through this story, we see Jesus coming to the pool called Bethesda. And Bethesda means house of mercy. And it was a place where people with disabilities would come. It talks about the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. And they came in the belief that when the waters in that pool would start to be stirred, that whoever got into the pool first might just be healed. And so for these people in that age and that society without social security or NDIS or anything else, this was their place of hope. This was their place where they may have the opportunity for healing or a better life. And so they were desperate to take whatever option there could possibly have been. And in Jerusalem, that place was the House of Mercy. That was where they would go. And so it's here at the House of Mercy that we find Jesus, a man of great compassion, a man of great love, wandering through this place of people in great need. And then Jesus approaches one particular man. Now what's interesting is in the Gospels, in nearly all cases, someone comes to Jesus requesting healing. In this case, Jesus identifies the person. And it seems that no one even knew who this Jesus was, even though he was walking in the midst of them. And Jesus sees this man, and it says he learned that he'd been an invalid for 38 years. And as we discover later on, this man had actually been well, and then something had happened, we don't know what, but he had become an invalid. He'd been in that state for 38 years. And Jesus said to him, "Do you want to get well?" How would you respond if that was you? Most of you would say, "Of course I want to be well." But if you've been living in this community of people around the pool of Bethesda, believing that this is your place of healing, and every time the waters get stirred and you thought, "This is my chance," someone beat you to it, how'd you start to feel? Would your hope start to fall? Would you start to become disillusioned? And the invalid man says, "When I try to get into the pool by myself, someone else beats me. And I haven't got anyone else here to help me get in." And you can hear this despair that's in his response. And we don't know how often the waters were stirred. We don't even know if the stirring caused healing. But this cumulative effect of not being able to get into the pool first was taking its toll on this man. And he is giving up hope. He has settled for a life of giving excuses that, "Oh, someone else will always get there before me. No one's here to help me. I'm all alone in this. I live with this." That's his response when Jesus says, "Do you want to get healed? Do you want to be well?" See, he still had this vague hope for healing. Otherwise, he wouldn't have stayed hanging around that pool of Bethesda. But he seems to have accepted that this is his lot in life. It's the way it is. Nothing else he could do. And so if Jesus came to you today and said, "Do you want to be well?" What area of your life would you think of? Because let's be real, every one of us probably has an area in our life where we're hurting. For some, it's physical. For some, it's a physical pain, it's a chronic illness, it's difficulty that you live with because of a physical issue in your life. Just like that man at the House of Mercy. But for others, it's actually hidden. People don't see it. It might be a mental health issue that you struggle with. For others, it's an emotional health issue. and someone says something or does something, and it starts to trigger off a whole series of thoughts in your mind. It starts to trigger feelings about yourself or others that become unhealthy. Because all of us have those areas where we struggle. And maybe we've tried to overcome it. Maybe we've sought medical help. Maybe we've sought counselling or therapy or prayer or some other strategy. But if we're real and we have a struggle in life, sometimes we start to lose hope that it's going to get better. Because we've tried everything that we know to try. And we have prayed in faith. We've had others pray in faith for us. And we still struggle with it. And we start to wonder, am I always going to live like this? And it seems that we can't drag ourselves from where we are to that place of hope and healing, just like that man could not drag himself to the pool in time. It's tough, isn't it? It's tough when we really scratch deeper below the surface and realize that that's true for many of us. And it was tough for this man right now. Because here is Jesus standing with him, and he doesn't know who Jesus is. He thinks he's just some kind stranger who's come along and asked him he wants to get well, and in his mindset, get well means get into the pool. And so he thinks, oh, maybe this guy could pick me up. If the waters get stirred today, maybe he could carry me in. Maybe he could help me be in first. So could you imagine what happened when Jesus says to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. Now we have to look at these words, get up. Because in the gospel, whenever we see the word get up, it's actually a really powerful phrase. Incredibly powerful. We see it when Joseph was asleep and the angel says to him, get up and take your wife and child and flee to Egypt. Why? Because it was about life. This is about saving the life of the baby. We see Jesus taking just a couple of his disciples in to meet in an upper room with a girl who had died. And he says to little girl, I say to you, get up. It's resurrection. When you look at the word get up and you do a word search on it, it talks about Jesus says that on the third day I will get up. Resurrection. Jesus got up out of the grave. See, whenever we see this word get up, it's actually speaking about new life. It's a powerful phrase that says we are going to change you from what you were into what you can be. It's really powerful. And so when this man hears these words, get up, pick up your mat and walk, the power of those words compelled him to suddenly get up. And he did. Could you imagine that? 38 years as an invalid. And suddenly he gets up. Not only that, he then picks up his mat and he walks. Take a moment and think about how astonished you'd be. 38 years of being incapacitated. Suddenly, what's he do? He grabs his mat and takes off. Now, why did he take his mat other than Jesus told him to? The first thing is, for him, this was a man who could not even drag himself from where he was into the pool very quickly anyway. So by standing up, grabbing his mattress, rolling it up and walking down the street with it, isn't that a declaration of healing? He is saying, I am so healed, I'm a furniture removalist now. Secondly, he says, I'm taking my mat with me because I'm not going back there again. That's powerful, isn't it? He says, that's how I used to live, but I don't need to stay in that place anymore. I've got a whole new life in front of me because Jesus said to me, get up. And that power transformed my life. And you know, if the story ended here, it would be a happily ever after movie for Hollywood, wouldn't it? I mean, what a great ending. But it's not the end of the story. Because we're still left wondering about our own hurts. About those things in our life. And we're still wondering, why did Jesus choose this man? I mean, it says that there was a great multitude of them. Why did Jesus wander among all of them who were probably just as needy? Why did he choose that one? And we relate to this because we hear miracles of people getting healed. And we go, why not me? Why did Jesus heal that one and not me? We see people who've struggled with depression and they're now okay. We go, why them and not me? We see people who've had prayer and their prayers have been answered and we say, God, why did you answer their prayer and not mine? I'm just as needy. And the answer is we don't know why. Still a good question to ask. But we don't know why. But you see, there's another side to this story that we have to get hold of. This man had been healed physically, but there's a lot more to life than just physical healing. Because it doesn't mean that just because someone gets a touch from Jesus, everything is suddenly all better. We like to think this idea that if I just get a touch from Jesus, it will change every single aspect of my life. It's true, it will change parts of your life, but sometimes there's a responsibility that we take on as to whether or not it will affect all of our life. Because what happens is as soon as this man gets up, rolls up his mattress and walks down the street, he gets confronted by religious leaders and they're not in a good mood. They're really unhappy. And they say, it is the Sabbath and the law forbids you to carry your mat. Now, what would you do if you were this guy? I reckon most of us would be carrying our mat and go, what? No, mate, you don't understand. I've been an invalid for 38 years. Today's my day and I just got healed by, I don't know who he was, but I am really excited about today, so I know you don't want me to carry my mat, but this is the day of my healing and I just want to tell you all about it. I mean, isn't that what you'd want to do? Surely, after 38 years, you'd be so excited, you'd be wanting to tell everyone. If someone tells you that you're doing the wrong thing, you'd go, no mate, you just don't understand, I am so excited about today. Not this man. He just got healed. And as soon as he gets confronted by the Jewish leaders, he reverts back to his old way of thinking, his old mindset of hopelessness, and it's someone else's fault. Someone else will get there. No one's here to help me in the pool. Oh, it's someone else's fault. It's not my fault. The man who made me well, he told me to pick up the mat, so it's his fault. And that's what he said, isn't it? Didn't he get that? See, there's this subtle backstory in this passage of Scripture. Why did John include the details of Bethesda? In verse 2 it said, now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Why did John include that level of detail? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One reason is that just 131 years ago, in 1888, an archaeologist was digging and discovered, and has since they have excavated the full pool of Bethesda. Guess what? It's near the Sheep Gate in the old part of the city with five columns. Just like Jesus said, or John said. Why mention the five columns? Because John wanted us to see that this man had been sitting under the old law represented by the five books of Moses. That's the way he'd been living his life. And you see, when Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk, he's saying to him, get up out of where you were and go into a new life that is in store for you. You don't have to live under that way anymore because you've met me, Jesus. And it can transform your life. That was the opportunity this man had. New life in Christ. But what happened? As soon as he got confronted by the Jewish leaders, and as soon as he had to make a choice, do I choose a new way of life to walk with Jesus, or do I choose the old way of life, living under the old law, he chose the old law. He chose that he'd rather submit to the Jewish leaders just like that and their man-made laws about the Sabbath, which were a far and complete exaggeration of anything that you find in the Old Testament. You see, this story is about a battle between Jesus and Jewish leaders. It's also a story about the mindsets that we have when we have walked in difficulty. See, this man had been living with a mindset of self-pity and blaming others. And he'd settled that this was his lot in life. And even now, he had had a touch from Jesus. He had experienced physical healing. But rather than embracing a new opportunity for a new and different way of thinking, he stayed in that same mindset that he had previously had. And when the Jews ask him why he's carrying his mat, rather than tell them about the healing he'd received at the hands of Jesus, he instead blamed Jesus, the man who just healed him. And what's interesting is this passage also tells us when they say to him, "Who is it that healed you?" He goes, "I don't know." He didn't even find out the name of the man who just healed him. He didn't thank Jesus. In fact, when Jesus finds him in the temple, what's his response to Jesus? "I'm going to dob you into the Jewish authorities." That's what he did. That was his response. Why? Because this man continued to live under his old mindset. His body had been healed, his heart had not changed. And that's why Jesus confronts him with these words, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." This man had recovered his health. See, when Jesus says to him, "See, you are well again," what that tells us is this man had been well. Something had happened that had incapacitated him for 38 years, and now he is well again. He had experienced what health was. He had experienced what illness was. He is now physically well. Surely he would be grateful. But the evidence is that he experienced the grace of God without expressing gratitude to God. And that's why Jesus said to him, "Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." In other words, you can experience healing in one dimension of your life, but unless your heart changes and unless you move into a relationship with God, then something worse may happen. If you don't walk in the relationship with the Lord, you will not experience eternity in heaven. Rather, you will experience hell. In fact, the writer of the Hebrews talked about this in Hebrews 10, 26 and 27. If we deliberately keep on sinning, after we have received the knowledge of the truth, no sacrifice for sins is left, but only a fearful expectation of judgment and of raging fire that will consume the enemies of God. That passage describes this man who had just been healed. Because this man had met with Christ. Who is Christ? Christ is truth personified. He said he is the truth. John 1 told us he is full of truth. And this man had just met with the truth. And what had he done? He had rejected him. And as a result, he risked facing a future of judgment and hell. As it says here, of judgment and of raging fire. But you know, it doesn't have to be this way. Not at all. Because you see, John doesn't just describe this story. He describes an almost identical story in John chapter 9. And we're going to talk about John chapter 9 a little bit later in the year as we continue through this series. Many of you will be familiar with it. It's a story of a man who was born blind. And he got healed when he was about 40 years old. Let's take a moment and compare this. In John chapter 5, what we discover is that Jesus took the initiative. He walked through the pool of Bethesda. He saw this man. He asked him if he wanted to be healed. Jesus took the initiative for this man who'd been an invalid for 38 years. Where did it happen? At the pool of Bethesda. What do we know about when it happened? It happened on a Sabbath. What do we know? Well, the Jews got upset because it happened on a Sabbath, because the Sabbath rules had been broken because you weren't allowed to carry your mat. So they were more focused on the fact that some man carried his mat than the fact that he'd been healed after 38 years. What happened? The man who'd been healed had no idea who Jesus was. And he had no idea where this man was who'd healed him, where he'd gone. And then we discover that Jesus goes to the temple, finds this man, and reveals himself to this man and says, I'm Jesus. In John chapter 9, a story of a man where Jesus took the initiative and Jesus healed this man who had been born blind and been blind for about 4 decades, same length of time. Where? Well, again, it involved a pool. He said, go wash your eyes in the pool of Siloam. What happened? He got healed on a Sabbath. What happened? The Jews got upset because this man had been healed. What happened? The man who got healed had no idea who Jesus was or where he'd gone. And then Jesus goes and finds this man who'd been healed and reveals himself to him. Do you see the parallels? It's amazing, isn't it? Why would John include 2 stories? He only includes 7 miracles in his gospel. Why tell 2 that are nearly identical? Why? Because he wants us to understand the ending. What's the difference? The difference is that in John chapter 5, verse 15, this man who'd experienced this miraculous healing at the hands of Jesus goes away and tells the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who made him well. He dobbed him in to the Jewish authorities. What happens to the other man? It says Jesus heard that they'd thrown him out. He got thrown out of the temple. He got thrown out of society. And when Jesus found him, he said to him, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me so I may believe in him. Jesus said, you've now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Almost an identical story, isn't it? Except the ending. This ending in John chapter 9 is full of life and joy of a man who worshipped Jesus. In John chapter 5, the other rejected Jesus. Why? Because the first man in John 5, he hung on to his former way of thinking. Because it's possible to desire healing for its convenience and goodness and yet miss the more important thing of relationship with Jesus. This man experienced Jesus and missed out on him, experienced healing and missed out on Jesus because of thought patterns that he had not yet let go of. And the truth is, again, that could be any one of us. Because all of us probably have some area in our life where we still need healing. And it's not easy. I know that. There's a number of areas in my life that have collided in the last while that really hurt me. And it can trigger thought patterns. It can trigger actions. It can trigger emotions. And suddenly you start to deal with those and you've got to suddenly confront yourself about why am I thinking this way? Why am I, pardon me, doing these things? And so I know it can be hard, really hard. And for some of you, when you think about what happens and what confronts you or what triggers you, you start to move into ways of thinking and old thought patterns that mightn't be healthy. And suddenly you start doing things that you realize you don't want to do. It might be harmful self-talk. For our young people, self-harming is a huge issue in their response. For others, it's binging on food or movies or binging on shopping or binging on gaming or binging on porn. And these are habit patterns that have the effect of causing us to walk away from Jesus at a time that we really need to be walking to him. That's the difference between these two men. One man went to his old thought patterns and rejected Jesus. The other man celebrated who Jesus was and worshipped him in the same storyline. It's easy to settle for ways that we've lived in the past, but it doesn't have to be that way. Galatians 5, chapter 1 says this, and this is from the Passion Translation. Let me be clear, the Anointed One has set us free. Not partially, but completely and wonderfully free. We must always cherish this truth and stubbornly refuse to go back into the bondage of our past. Isn't that powerful? What's it look like to stubbornly refuse to go back to our old thought patterns? It means that Jesus who in the same ways he walked around the Pool of Siloam, in the same ways he walked around that group of people and they didn't even know that he was there, Jesus walks around here among us this morning. Some of you may really be aware of that. Some of you may not be aware of it. And it doesn't matter, because in the Pool of Siloam, most people weren't aware of it. No one knew who he was. Otherwise, they'd have been asking him for healing. But this morning, I believe we're meant to finish with a time of prayer. I believe we're meant to create a space that if there are areas of your life, and they may be hidden, you don't need to disclose them, but you need to acknowledge them. And there might be thought patterns or habit patterns or action patterns that you step into when you get confronted by difficult times. And again, you don't need to disclose them, but you need to acknowledge them. And this morning's an opportunity for us to realize that there are issues that we need to deal with and that we can invite Jesus in to those situations. That we can invite him to come. And we can choose to tell Jesus that we want to walk with him through it, like the man who'd been born blind, rather than walk away from him or reject him. I believe that today's a day for us to acknowledge that there are habit patterns that we may have which are unhealthy, and to say, I don't want to continue to walk in that old mindset. I don't want to continue to walk in the way that I used to. Whether it's self-talk, whether it's binging, whatever it is. And instead I'm going to choose to walk with Jesus into freedom. I'm going to choose to walk in wholeness. Completely and wonderfully free. And I'm going to stubbornly refuse to go back to the bondage of my past. And so this morning, I'm going to invite you that if you want to say, I want to deal with an issue in my life, I'm going to invite you to just come to the front in this last song. And you don't need to disclose what the issue is. You don't need to disclose your habit patterns that flow out of what happens when you get confronted. But I do believe we need to acknowledge before Jesus that we want him to walk with us. That we want him to be the one that we turn to, that we might live in worshipping him rather than walking away from him. And so if we can move into this last song, and if you would like someone to pray with you, there will be members of the prayer team who will be happy to come to the front. And if we need more, then I invite those who are prayers in the church to come and pray with people. But let's take time this morning. I said it's not a happy ending unless we move into the John 9 story and choose to walk with Jesus. And that does change it to a happy ending. Let's pray.
That concludes our sermon recording. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or require further information, please contact our church office on 07 46 36 11 44, or you can email us office@rangeville.com.